Welcome to the Art Talk podcast, where I tell the stories of art, artists, and interview people in the arts. I am Karin Merks, your host, and I am an artist, art historian, teacher, and mentor. This is episode 80 of Art Talk, and today I have a conversation with my friend Maggie Sloan about AI. We both are artists who prefer to paint and draw from life. AI is now used by many people who never had any education at all in the arts, have no skills or hardly any except using a computer to alter existing images, photos. And some use their own art to train the robot, others merely prompt. We will talk about visual art and painting and drawing, not the other arts, like being a film director, because there's a lot of apples and pears and comparisons out there. So we stick to what we are good at. So welcome, Maggie, and happy to have you with me to discuss this topic.
Hi, Karin. Well, I hope it doesn't turn into a rant, but it might.
Well, I decided that AI is there and AI will stay there if it does something with art. I don't know, but I'm not going to fight it. I'm going to fight for what I stand for. I think that's way more positive. And so how did you come across AI and what was your first thought about it?
You know, I was trying to remember that, how I first came across it, and I couldn't really... It sort of seemed like it snuck up on me, you know, it. And so the nearest I can come to thinking about the beginning was fractal art. Remember fractal art back in the '80s? Although that's not really AI. It's more like a mathematical logarithm. But then again, when you think about it, AI is nothing but a mathematical logarithm too, that, kind of is self-starting. It's almost like a perpetual motion machine, kind of. So I think it would be fractal images. And then, you know, it's just exploded on the scene this last year, and I really became aware of it. I think way back last year, I did actually try one of them. I don't remember. Maybe it was DALL-E. I tried it once. And the results were just horrible. They were just wretched. I mean, I could have done it better myself. I didn't really, I was sort of like, I don't see a point. I can just do it myself if this is what it's going to create.
Yeah. For me, it was, and not that I was aware of the existence a long time ago, because AI exists for a long time, but not in the public sphere. And I know a friend of mine is a graphic designer, and he codes himself to create generative art pieces. But he has some control himself because he writes the code. The exact outcome is not something he can say, but he can choose. And he can choose, this is okay, this is rubbish. So there is something in it there. But AI as such, I knew existed. And then exactly what you say, it somehow exploded. It was really literally thrown in the public sphere. And for me, it was that ChatGPT, because I saw so many people on, Facebook, mainly coaches, etc. They were already the expert. And I had done a course with Mira C for how to market your course. And they talked about AI, and they talked about garbage in, garbage out. They use it, but with really specific prompts. But AI, to me, when you have that, it's generic. It's mediocre. And you can get letters out of it, but it has no personality at all. Now, when it comes to art, I have seen things. So what does it do? It doesn't copy. It just takes all the images, mostly digital images, by the way. And then with the algorithm and mathematics, it cobbles together bits and bobs. So you get a mesh of zeros and ones, and it
And they say, okay, do it in this style and that style, and that's all. But then you see a tit with a hand out of it, or you see a photo of what is her name, Kardashian or so, with six fingers.
Right, because AI can't do hands, which I think is hilarious because, you know, you're a realist artist, you do figurative work. Hands are like the hardest thing, right?
Exactly. And that's what I liked with this Ai Weiwei, who said, everything it can copies is meaningless. And I had like, you really have no idea what you're talking about. And he talks about realistic art. And I have like, you have no skill to start with. And second, if I make a photo of your pumpkin seed floor, which I do not have a skill for, I need a skill for, I can make that here if I want to, and I let it crawl by AI, you get the same. So that, it is a nonsense story, but it is those people, that's my feeling, those people who have no real skills who try to defend themselves.
Well, I think, I don't know about Weiwei because I don't know that he has a the academic background that, you know, we have. But I think there are people with skills who are using AI. And I think that's going to be the differentiation. You know, I have friends who are mostly retired old guys or photographers. And one's a ceramicist, and they're lovely people. I love them. And, what, you know, they do lovely work. One of them, he does actually really cute ceramic sculptures, and he does like mashups of creatures, you know, like a cat with donkey ears or what have you. But instead of coming up with those ideas himself, now he has been asking AI to do it. You know, give me a cat with donkey ears, make a dragon with, I don't know, a snake tail, whatever, you know. And I said, well, but can't, I mean, I can draw that.
Yeah.
I mean, I can sit down and I can draw that. You can give me any prompt you want and I can draw it. And he said, well, I can't draw it. And I thought, I don't know how you compose your pictures, Karen, but I compose mine like a painting, a landscape painting might take 2 weeks to get finished or longer because I spend a lot of time drawing compositions. I spend a lot of, you know, like I am working on a painting right now and I just drew like 20 compositions yesterday and I'll probably draw 20 more ideas. Mm-hmm. And that's the part I love the best. Because that's the part where I'm thinking and I'm making decisions and I'm creating something. And by the time I get to the painting part of it, it's then I almost am a machine because I've done so much work ahead of time. But that's where I go down roads that I wouldn't have thought that I would have gone down. That's where, you know, like maybe my first idea was, I thought it was great, but when I started exploring other ideas, my first idea was one I discarded. And if I let a machine do that, I'm just not even sure what's the point. Why am I doing that? Because the machine can do that.
Yeah, because I think that, well, my process is different. I do sketches and I like to do focus sketches. So observing is key. If I do not observe, just so not quickly this and then put it down, but really look, maybe 3 minutes, and then look away and do 10 minutes on a little piece, because then you start to see, you start to enlarge your perception and your observation capabilities. Because what people do not understand is that they miss so freaking much because they don't look long enough. And so I am trained that way to look, concentrate on one piece and then walk to my easel and put that down. I look at directions, etc. So that's under drawing, under painting, but I now also have decided, because I want to challenge myself with pencil, because that's not really my tool, to do sketches, like foreshortening. So I have my hand like that, And then I stare at it for a long time. And then I start drawing it. And so it has so many benefits. And, you know, there is the law of least effort. And that is that most people are inherently lazy. And I think that the problem is that they all want their 15 minutes fame. And we are driven by this strange idea that we need speed, more speed. So they are afraid of losing out of speed, that they are behind. You're never behind. In fact, you get more done and be more accurate and see more and get more opportunities if you start to observe. And that's also the importance of art, by the way. And so, yeah.
I agree with you. I was trained that way too for figurative work, to really look, and you know how your brain lies to you. Your brain tells you a thing is a thing, but your eye is the true thing. When you really look, you realize that your brain just told you, I don't know, like a head was tilted to the right, but your eye looks at it and goes, oh, no, wait, it's not. It's actually tilted to the left.
Mm-hmm.
Because our brains are just not really reliable.
Well, but that is when you observe for a longer time, you start to see more, and you grow your perception of the things. And also, if you do it with your own hand drawing, you start to get something from your right hemisphere. You get insights that you do not and never will have with something as AI, because it is built on what people put in. And so it can't get more out. But if you try your donkey with a dragon tail, and you make sketches like you do, if you are in fantasy world, I think you get way more and way more fantasy. I think it's we live in a world where the real fantasy, the things that we get and channel down, we get through our right hemisphere and put on the canvas or on the paper is or has been downgraded. Like we de-emphasized skills to start with. But do I think this has a future? I don't think so, because we still need human imagination. A machine can't have any imagination. We still need human emotion. And I've seen when this Vermeer exhibition was on, they asked people to make something in the style of Vermeer, whatever. And they used AI to make the girl with the earring. It had no emotion at all. It was just a stiff image. It didn't say anything.
That's what I find with most AI is that I've seen, especially the fantasy. And it's really, you know, it's real big in the fantasy world, the deviant art world. And I, you know, it's like I saw one image of it was an old man, and it was all swirly and lots of sort of net things that would be difficult for a painter to do. Not impossible, but difficult. You'd have to have a lot of skill to do it. And then I looked at it, and the skin was so detailed, like the AI had created every single pore and line, and it did not have any emotion for me. No. And also it took me, you know, the uncanny valley. Do you know, have you heard that term, the uncanny valley?
Mm-hmm.
Where should we define it? Do people out there know what the uncanny valley is?
Doesn't matter. Explain it so that the people can.
Well, my understanding of the uncanny valley is that humans are, when you see something that's so realistic, but not quite, it puts mm-hmm. you in this, gives you a weird feeling, an icky feeling, mm-hmm. because not something real. It's not a human. It's not an animal. It's not something that you can identify. That's my limited understanding of the uncanny valley. That's why so much hyper-realistic, photorealistic art sometimes also has that same feeling.
Yeah.
But the AI art I've seen often, especially if it's trying to be photorealistic, it doesn't quite make it. It's something else. It's not a human thing. And that's what I've noticed about a lot of AI art that tries to be human. Then there's other AI art that doesn't try to be human. It, you know, it tries to be more abstract. And I have to admit, I haven't seen as much of that because it's difficult to sift through that. Because there's so much of the fantasy stuff going on. And some of the fantasy stuff is fun. It's like, you know, Disney on steroids kind of thing, you know.
Yeah, I know, but, you know, I rather watch an old-fashioned Disney, which you can see is drawn by hand.
Right? Well, I just saw Miyazaki's Boy with the Heron. Have you seen that one yet?
No.
It's Studio Ghibli, and it was... my understanding was it was all hand-drawn.
Mm-hmm.
It just has so much life and blood to it, you know. It feels real, even though it's total fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
But it just feels like super, super human and super real and heartfelt.
Yeah, that's true. And the thing is, visual art... teaches people to observe. That's the whole case. To slow down time. And that makes also that you will have, by the way, better memory and perceive more on what you see in this world and can make decisions accordingly. But somehow laziness is key, especially in the world we live in, where instant gratification has become the normal of every day. And it is where big pharma, big food have been built on. Those industries thrive on the illusion of speed. You need to have this microwave dinner because you don't have time. And that went on for generations. So now we are in a generation where people stare at a computer all the freaking time. And it means also that you get a devaluation of the IQ and the EQ, emotional quotient. So the only concern I have is when people see a real painting that is painted and they don't stare at it through their phone, because go to a museum, they do not even watch with their own eyes, they stare through the lens of a phone, is they don't capture the emotion anymore because they're not used to looking at faces in real time.
I think there's definitely been a downgrade of that, of emotion and connection, of human connection.
Yeah. And that is what we need. Human connection is way more important. I mean, it is horrible when you receive an email that you know and feel and see this is ChatGPT because it's not personal. There's nothing personal in it. And I find that horrific. I write my own newsletters because I tell a story. And I think the world needs stories, and those are not AI generated. So
yeah. I'm going to admit, I do use ChatGPT and Claude to do my marketing hoo-ha.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I have to write a bunch of captions for Instagram or what have you, or more likely I'll write a thing, like I'll write a press release and then I'll say, I write the press release. And then I say, turn this press release into email, cover email or cover letter. And it does pretty well if you set up parameters for it. But those cover letters and those captions that I ask it to write, I do not consider those in any way, shape, or form my work.
Mm-hmm.
I consider that as if I've got a really clever secretary.
Copywriter.
Right. I've freelanced it out. It's not in any way, shape, or mine at all.
Yeah. Well, that is also a problem when we talk about art, because the machines who generate these images are trained by, I heard lately, like 6 billion stolen images.
Mm-hmm.
They just scroll them from the internet, and mostly digital, because a lot of people are doing digital stuff. And yeah, there are a few people who are allowed to use the content of a museum and then generate these colorful bulbs that come out of the wall, etc. But look, stare at it for 2 minutes, and then it starts become boring. And so AI generates the image, not you. Even if it generates your work, then you are not the one who made it. It is always the machine who creates it.
I've been thinking about that because I had that same attitude about it, that you're just freelancing it out. I describe a thing, you know. I worked as an illustrator for a number of years, and I worked with illustrators, and I worked in the magazine world, and the art director, you know, gives you a brief and tells you what he wants, and he'll even ask you to do it in a certain style. And I felt like a lot of what I was seeing in AI artwork is that same thing, where you were acting as an art director. So, you know, and you'll see, like, when you, in a portfolio, you'll list who your art director was, who your graphic designer was when you work as an illustrator. And so I felt like AI was sort of like that. But I started exploring bigger names in AI, not just my retired friend who makes clay animals. And I think now what I'm kind of, you know, this is all in flux, Karen. This is so new. You know, this is life-changing, game-changing. You know, we lived through when the graphic design industry was completely upended in the 80s, right?
Yep.
In 1981, I wrote a paper for a class about computers in the art world, and everything I could find written about it, all my resources said, well, you know, it's a novelty. It's never gonna really take a place in computer. And the computers will never really take a place in the art world.
Hmm.
And of course, that was like 1980. By 1983, people were losing their jobs in the graphic design industry all over the place. I had a sister-in-law who was a film stripper. That did not mean she took her clothes off. That meant she prepared hard film, real film, for the camera to take a picture to go to press, to make a plate to go to press. Well, that job, with the advent of computers and Adobe software and Macs, that just went away. You know, and that was a good job for her. Like, she bought a house on that job. She did that for years. And I think it's going to change. I think AI is going to be that kind of game changer. I think we're going to see a loss of jobs like we haven't seen since maybe the Industrial Revolution in the 1830s. Sorry, train of thought here. I have a point. So my thought about it is that I think you can look at it one of two ways, different levels. So think about a player piano. You know what a player piano is? They have those rolls with the little holes. But a player piano can also be played as a piano. It's not just most player pianos. It can also be played. So I kind of think of AI as some people use it like a player piano. They just put that little roll in with the holes and turn it on, and it makes a song, a predetermined song. And by the way, those are like some of the first computers. Really, really primitive. But that's how I started with computers, with punch cards. Did you start that way too? Like, you had punch cards?
No.
We're showing our age here. And then other people don't even bother with the roll. they can play the piano. They have the skills to play the piano. And so some of the really high level AI things that I'm seeing, and it's not necessarily static art or 2D art, it's more video. And I know that we were not going to talk about that because it's apples and oranges, but I'm seeing, you know, like they're thinking on a level that I have trouble even understanding what they're talking about, you know? And a lot of it is really performative. Is that the right word? Performative art. Just a second, I have to look it up because I have forgotten the names already. But I've got a couple of artists that I think would be interesting for people to look at. Can I say that? Can I say other artists?
Of course. Yeah.
Okay. So there's one woman named, I'm sorry, I didn't look up how to say her name. It's Sugwin Chung.
Oh, yeah. I know her. Yeah.
And she is an artist. She's with Bell Labs right now. So that's pretty cool. She's got a residency at Bell Labs. And she trained the AI on her hand, on her artwork. She didn't use other people's artwork. And I think that's an important point. Mm-hmm. She used her own artwork to train the AI. And she trained the robot arms to draw. And then she draws in dialogue with them. So they're able to see what she's drawing and respond to what she's drawing. And I think that's interesting. And she makes 2D art with it that's abstract. It's kind of interesting. It's not my preferred kind of art because I like more realistic art. But it's interesting, nevertheless, and it's a performance. You know, she's got the whole look, and she dresses up, and her hair is all done up. Yeah. She's got a whole performance going on, which is a part of the art world. I mean, we just know that's part of the art world. It always has been. And that's interesting. But I think it's interesting that she has used the AI as a tool. And I think it's interesting that she's having a dialogue with the machine.
But that's something that you say is very important. She, as an artist, uses it as a tool. Most are not artists and claim to use it as a tool. And they say it's the same like a brush or whatever. I don't see it as a brush because it can't make those brush strokes. I haven't seen that anyway, but so I think there is a difference here. She is exploring what this robot can do, to how far she can train it, and how she and the robot can interact together. That is something different than stealing millions of art, make apps from a phone, and let everyone come up with rubbish.
Yeah, you know, the whole idea about just the great piles of rubbish that are being created. When you think about artwork, if you go back in time, which I'm sure you do because you're an art historian, but it wasn't until, you know, the 19th century that images in people's homes were very common. Right? Mostly you found them in churches or rich people's home because most people were frankly just too poor to have images in their home. And as soon as, you know, printing presses, well, I mean, printing started when, Karen, in the 1400s? Sorry, when was Gutenberg?
Gutenberg, well, we have here Plantin, that is in the 17th century.
So AD, I don't remember dates well. I've got terrible time blindness, but people were able to start having images in their homes. And now we're awash in images. We have so many images that to tell somebody or to ask somebody to spend time with an image, it's really difficult. You know, what image do they choose?
And yeah, because they're all overloaded. There is really an image overload.
Yes.
And I think that's also the problem, because you see that people, they all want to jump on art. And what you said, graphic design. I have done graphic design. I have had a business in graphic design for 10 years. I get asked if people have work for website or whatever constantly, because the real graphic designers lose jobs because all the nitwits go to Canva, who also uses AI, by the way. And you can see that because they have no insight in color theory. They don't know nothing. They don't know anything about typography. It shows. It shows.
But it's like we've talked before, Karen, you don't know what you don't know.
No, and that's a problem, because if you say that it doesn't match or that doesn't, then they feel attacked instead of wanting to learn. And mm-hmm. I think it's inherent on where we live in this era. Everything needs to be fastest, as fast as you can. I need to paint 20 canvases, and I do this with AI. I go to the printer and it prints it on the canvas. But if I look at those images, I miss something. I miss the emotion. There is no emotion. There is no authenticity. I miss the energy that comes off, because it isn't there.
People dig that stuff, though. Last summer, I exhibited next to a photographer who is an early adopter.